If you're interested in listening ad-free, go to patreon.com/drnosleep. There you can enjoy my ad-free podcast and never have to listen to ads again. That's patreon.com/drnosleep. Now time for the story.
Talk to Nice Sleep.
I'm turning off the lights in the house when I hear the noise. It's a giggle, and it's coming from Layla's room. At first, I'm ready to just let it go. But then I think about the last time I heard her giggling. I had ducked my head inside the room with a smile on my face to look at my niece, hoping she was finally coming out of her shell. But what I saw made me think just the opposite. She was sitting on her bed, her back to me, and hugging her doll tightly. The doll's appearance made me step back from the door. I still hadn't gotten used to it. Its eyes were completely white, its face cracked and distorted at the mouth, giving it a lopsided grin. And as I stepped into the room, I noticed that Layla wasn't just hugging the doll. She was squeezing it with all her might, her little body shaking as if she were trying to suffocate the thing. When she saw I was in the room, she stopped, putting the doll down and looking mutely up at me. I asked if she was okay, but she didn't answer. She hadn't spoken a word to me since her parents, my sister and brother-in-law, were killed in a car accident. But even before that, my sister had told me she thought something was wrong with Layla. Poor girl, she's at it hard. And she's my responsibility now. As I move up the stairs after turning off the lights, I'm not sure if I should peek into the room or not. Maybe the doll is some sort of coping mechanism. Maybe I should let it run its course. I tell myself if the creepy doll is getting her to giggle, it's a good thing. But I'm not so sure. It's been only a week since the accident. An accident Layla was there for. It's a miracle she survived, given that both her parents died in the car crash. The child psychologist I contacted told me it takes time. We have an appointment to see her tomorrow. So I stop outside her door, which is cracked open a couple of inches, and peer inside. I can see Layla sitting on the side of the bed, her back to me. She's looking across to the other side of the room. I can't see what she's looking at, but Layla seems to be having a good time. She's kicking her little legs and making humming sounds. There's a noise like a book falling to the ground from inside the room. My heart goes double time because I've been watching Layla the whole time. She hasn't moved. Suddenly, I'm certain someone's in the room with her. I shove the door open to reveal the strange doll staring at me with its blank white eyes. It's sitting on the little rocking chair next to the window. There's a picture book on the floor in front of the rocking chair. Layla moves her head slowly, turning to look at me. Her eyes are slitted, her lips pressed together. Stepping into the room, I look around for signs of anyone else.
Is someone in here with you?
Layla crosses her chubby little arms and looks away, blonde hair whipping over her shoulder. I fix my gaze on the doll. It still seems to be looking at me, like its head is turned to follow me as I move around the room. But that can't be possible. A sudden rush of anger crashes against the inside of my skull. Rushing forward, I reach out to grab the damn doll, to throw it into a corner so it's not looking at me anymore. But before I can touch it, Layla releases a high-pitched scream from the bed. As soon as I turn to look at her, she stops, staring up at me.
What?
I say.
What's wrong?
There's a thump, and I look over to see the doll on the floor next to the picture book. As I reach down to pick both items up, Layla screams again. Clenching my teeth, I grab the book and the doll, and a blast of frigid air runs up my arm from the doll. My spine crackles as I wrench my head back, eyes rolling up into my skull as the world around me rushes away in a whoosh of schizophrenic colors. I find myself in the back of a car, a familiar car, my sister Jenny's sedan. My brother-in-law Mike is driving, and my sister sits in the front passenger seat, looking down at her phone. Layla sits in a toddler car seat in the back. The doll is in her lap, looking like a normal toy without the white eyes or the creepy grin. I'm here, but not here. I have no form. I'm not sitting. Instead, I seem to be floating above the scene as the car drives along a two-lane highway. Layla looks at her doll, then up at her father, and then out the windshield. The road ahead seems clear, There are several driveways leading to homes on either side of the small highway, but no cars for the time being. Then I see a truck up ahead, backing out of one of the driveways on the right side of the road.
Daddy?
Layla says.
Yes?
Mike says, looking up into the rearview mirror.
Look!
She says, holding up the doll and making it dance. Mike's eyes start to go back to the road, but Layla screams.
Look!
The truck in the driveway isn't slowing. I want to scream, to tell Mike to stop or to pay attention. Layla throws the doll at the side of her father's head. He wrenches his head away, jerking the wheel slightly, but not nearly enough to get out of the lane. Up ahead, the truck's back tires bump onto the highway. Jenny looks up from her phone and screams, but it's too late. The sedan hits it going 60 miles an hour. Glass flies as the sedan skids sideways and flips, rolling twice before coming to rest upside down in a ditch on the other side of the road. Jenny is clearly dead, the side of her skull bashed in. But Mike is still alive. He gasps, hanging upside down in his seat. Layla, who seems unfazed and untouched, releases herself from the car seat and grabs a piece of broken glass. She crouches behind her father and uses the glass to open up his carotid artery. Blood pours out onto the doll, which came to rest below him on the overturned roof of the car. Layla quickly grabs the blood-covered doll and moves out of the car. As the vision fades, I can hear Mike and Jenny screaming, pleading for my help. I realize with sickening clarity that they're stuck in the doll, stuck there until the terrible wrong inflicted upon them is made right. My legs give, and I sit down hard in Layla's room, letting go of the doll. Chest heaving, I look up at the bed, but Layla's gone. I turn my head, seeing her step into the doorway from the hall, a terrible grin on her little face. She has a knife in her hand, and I know she plans to use it. When I was a kid, I lived across the street from a family with a little girl. Her name was Emily, and our parents used to get us together for playdates because we were around the same age. This started when we were really young, like 3 or 4. By the time we were 8 years old, we were nearly inseparable. But then one summer, Emily came home from a family trip with a doll. When you're 8 years old, you don't really know fear. Not unless you've experienced something terrible. And if you're lucky, terrible doesn't happen to you until much later in life. Emily and I weren't lucky. She called the doll Daisy. It was one of those with stiff arms and legs made out of plastic, attached to a soft fabric body filled with stuffing. It had a pink dress with white flowers printed on it. Daisies. This was right around the time Tickle Me Elmo was a huge hit, and the makers of the doll were apparently trying to cash in on the concept. Daisy had a voice box in her head, and when Emily pressed on her chest, she would talk or giggle. Unlike Elmo, she wouldn't vibrate or squirm, though. She had shimmery blonde hair and blue eyes over a button nose and a smiling mouth. Daisy looked like a normal doll, but for some reason, she creeped me out from the first time I saw her. And not a day after she brought the doll home, strange things started happening at Emily's house. I remember knocking on the door that day to see if Emily could play.
I know you wrote it!
Emily's mother shouted inside the house.
How could you say those things to me? I didn't write anything!
Her father shouted.
I don't know where that note came from!
Her mother answered the door, tears streaming down her face. She barely looked at me before turning away and shouting up the stairs for Emily. When my friend came out, she looked sullen. She stepped out the front door and then stopped, as if someone had called her name. But all I could hear was her mother crying inside.
I'll be right back,
Emily said. She went inside and came back out with Daisy a minute later. The doll sat nearby as we played in her front yard. Emily kept glancing at it, but they weren't happy glances. It was like she was suspicious of the thing. A couple of days later, I was shooting hoops in my driveway when I heard shouting from Emily's house. Her father burst out onto the porch with the doll in his hand, tossing it into the front yard before going back into the house. I watched the doll for a long time before I went back to shooting hoops. And when I glanced back over at the yard, it was gone. A couple of minutes later, I heard Emily's father yelling about the doll.
I don't want that thing in my house,
he shouted.
What did I tell you? I didn't do it,
Emily screamed.
I hate it.
Later that night, I heard screaming and glass breaking from across the street. It was late, and I was supposed to be in bed. But I went downstairs and found my mom and dad on the phone with 911 while they paced in the living room and looked out the window. I moved up between them and peered out the window, looking at my friend's house. The front door came open, and Emily ran out, tripping and falling down the porch steps. I ran to my door and outside, quickly looking both ways before I crossed the street. Both my parents were shouting as they ran after me. Emily was in pink pajamas that were stained crimson with fresh blood. It was on her face and in her hair. She was bawling as she ran up to my mom, who picked her up and hugged her. My dad had a strange look on his face that I didn't realize until later was fear. I'd never seen my dad terrified before, but he was that night as he moved up to the porch and peered through the door Emily had left open. I moved up behind him, unable to stop myself and not knowing just how bad things were inside the house. Before I could get much more than a glimpse of Emily's parents, my dad realized I was behind him. He turned around and scooped me up, getting me away from the bloody sight of the two hacked up bodies in the house. I just remember thinking that every knife in the house must have been sticking out of Emily's parents. We went across the street to my house while we waited for the police. My dad called 911 again and gave them the update. He stayed on the phone with them until the police got there. All the while, Emily was bawling. Most of her words I couldn't make out, but there was one that rang as clear as a church bell inside my head. Daisy. It was an accusatory cry, as if she was trying to convince us, and herself, that Daisy, the doll, had killed her parents. It took several hours for the police to sort everything out. As much as they could, anyway. They searched the neighborhood for the killer, but never found anyone. I overheard one of the police officers and a child services person talking to Emily in our kitchen after they got her cleaned up and calmed down. Emily kept saying that her doll did it, that she saw the doll do it. She described Daisy to them over and over. But the cops said there was no doll in the house matching that description. When I heard that, I went around the house and made sure every door and window was locked. I was the only one who believed Emily. But no one listens to kids about this kind of stuff. My parents offered to keep Emily until the social services people figured out what to do with her, but they said it was against the law. So we all went outside. It must have been 1 a.m. by that time to see Emily off. She gave me a hug before she got into the back of the car. I watched as the car started up and pulled away from the curb in front of my house. And as it moved off down the street, I heard Emily scream. Even though all the windows were up. Then I saw a familiar face pop up in the back window. Daisy, the doll's face.
Dude, it's unlocked,
Santos says, pushing up the window of the old Victorian-style house.
Who leaves their windows unlocked if they have anything of value inside?
I ask, looking down the side of the house toward the dark street.
Idiots,
Santos says, climbing through the window.
I'm telling you, man. This lady has all kinds of antiques we can sell. I have it on good authority.
Shaking my head, I climb through the window and into the house. It smells like old person, all musty and heavy and kind of sweet. I shut the window behind me and then follow Santos through the dark living room, dodging around velvet couches and side tables with doilies on them. He stops at the stairs to the second floor, tilting his head.
Did you hear that? No,
I whisper.
What was it? I swear I heard someone talking,
he says.
Maybe the old lady's awake. Fine, so let's come back later. Hell no, man. If she gives us any shit, I'll just shove her down the goddamn stairs.
Santos heads upstairs and I follow along, wincing at each and every creak of the stairs. We step through the first doorway on the left in the hallway.
Jesus,
I say, stepping back out. The room is filled with dolls. They're everywhere. On shelves, on the bed, on chairs and on the windowsill, and at a little table with a tea set arranged before them. They stare blankly in all directions, glassy eyes reflecting moonlight from the window. Santos swings his backpack off and puts it on the bed.
Come on, dude,
he says.
Grab the ones that look old. They're worth the most, I bet. This is what we came here for? Dolls? Yeah, man. How are we going to sell them? I have a guy.
Santos says.
You have a doll guy? Yeah, bro, just hurry up.
As I step into the room, chills running up and down my spine, I swing my own mostly empty backpack off and set it down on the bed. Turning, I let my gaze drag across the dolls, looking for the oldest ones. My eye catches on one sitting on the bed. It's a doll with shiny red curls falling around her porcelain face, which wears an expression of surprised worry. The eyes are glass or marble, green and glinting. As I reach out to grab her, I'm only half aware I'm doing it. I pick her up and bring her closer to my face, staring into her eyes. My focus narrows, and it's as if I'm seeing nothing but this doll, mesmerized by her strangely real eyes. I'm vaguely aware of a commotion between the foot of the bed and the window, but I pay no mind, not as long as I have Samantha to keep me company. "Yeah, Samantha," I say, as though she just told me her name. But as the commotion in the room dies down, my connection with the doll fades, bringing me back to reality.
"No, Samantha,"
I plead with her.
"Don't leave me. Don't."
Realizing I don't hear Santos anymore, I look up from the doll. My gaze moves to the foot of the bed where Santos lies on his back, staring up at the ceiling. 8 dolls surround his head, each one of them shoving an arm deep down into his mouth, stretching his jaw wider than it should go and making his throat bulge. There's another 24 dolls around him, at his arms and legs, as though they're holding the limbs down. None of them move, though. For a second, I think Santos is playing a trick on me, but the way those doll arms are shoved into his mouth looks downright painful. And as I stare at him, I notice he's not breathing. Fear makes my limbs heavy and my thoughts fast as I turn to the bedroom door. An old woman stands in the doorway, a wretched expression on her face. Her yellow teeth are bared and her eyebrows tilt down as she peers out from under them. I realize she's grinning. It's anything but a happy grin. I back away, looking over at Samantha for help, only to find an expression on her face that mirrors the one the old lady wears. There's movement all around me, and I look down to see that I'm surrounded by dolls. And they all wear that same insane expression on their faces as they close in on me,